Canto 5, Chapter 10. Jara Bharata meets Maharaj Rahugana. Sri Shuka said, "So it came to pass that Rahugana, the ruler of Sindhu and Sauvira, while travelling on the bank of the river Ikshumati, needed another palanquin carrier. He then sent the leader of his carriers to look for a suitable candidate. His search led by chance to the excellent Brahmin Jada Bharata, who, being a stout young man with firm limbs and the strength of an ass, was chosen by him, supposing that he was capable of carrying the load. Being forced to it, the great soul carried the palanquin, but he was not fit for the job. Engaged this way, the blessed Brahmin constantly looked 3 feet ahead, not to step on ants. Thus being all the time out of pace with the others, the palanquin was shaking. Rahugana, noticing this, then said to the man who carried him, 'O carriers, please walk in pace. Why is this palanquin carried so uneven?' Hearing their master speak that reproachfully, they told him apprehensively that it was due to the fourth carrier. 'Oh, it is not so, O God of man, that we, who always obey your orders, have fallen in neglect. We certainly do the best we can, but it is this new man who recently has been contracted to work with us, because of whom we cannot do our work as carriers. He is rather slow.' Although he, from the intimations, was certain that the problem had arisen because of a fault of one of them, King Rahugana, hearing the fearful words of the servants, gave, in spite of his political experience, out of his kshatriya nature, slightly in to the violence of anger. And to him, whose spiritual effulgence, because of his innate intelligence, could not be clearly distinguished, he with a mind full of passion said, 'Alas, what a trouble it is, my brother! All alone, on such a long journey, you certainly must have gotten very tired. And these colleagues of you are not of much help either. Nor is your cooperative firm body very strong. You must be troubled by old age, my friend.' Thus he sarcastically criticized him severely. But there was no protest of a false belief of I and mine from him, who in silence kept carrying the palanquin. As someone on the spiritual platform, he happened to be of such a particular disposition concerning the physical matters of having a from ignorance resulting finite vehicle of time, a physical body that consists of a mixture of the natural modes, the workload and material intentions. Thereupon, again being shaken because of the uneven carrying of his palanquin, Rahugana got very angry and said, 'Fool! What crap is this? You living corpse, ignore my reproaches completely. You just forget about them. Are you out of your mind? Just like Yamaraj with the common people, I shall teach you a lesson so that you will know your position here.' Despite that load of nonsense from the side of him who, rebuking, angrily out of passion and ignorance, thought that he could rule as a god of men, as a learned scholar and a by countless devotees honored votary of the Lord, the self-realized Brahmin smiled faintly, free from pride, with the poise of a master of yoga, a friend of all living beings, and then addressed the not-so-wise ruler as follows. The Brahmin said, 'What you so clearly stated, O great hero, does not contravene what I factually am. That would have been the case if I would really be this body, that carrier of the load. If to acquire a well-fed, strong body would be the way, I can tell you that that is no subject of importance to the person of self-realization present within the body. To be strong and stout, or skinny and weak, to be in physical or mental pain, or to be hungry, thirsty, afraid, quarrelsome, desirous, old-aged, sleepy or sensually motivated, to be angry or false, to be bewildered, or to be of lamentation, are matters belonging to this body, to the one born. But they are not the reality of what I originally am. To be a living soul, bound to death, to be a living corpse, is something settled by nature, O king. It just as well applies to you, for everything has a beginning and an end. But, O respected one, when one has an eye for what is unchangeable within the things that transform, to which one, as you defend, sees servants and masters, one speaks of doing the right thing in yoga. Discriminating to the person as you do in acting as the master betrays a narrow vision, and I do not see what other use it besides the convention would have. Who is, of this arranged order, the master, and who is the one to be controlled? Nevertheless, O king, with you as my master, what can I do for you? From my state of self-realization, O king, you gathered that I was a disheveled, mad ignoramus. If that would be true, what use would it then have to be punished by you? How can one teach a crazy, stupid person something? It is like grinding flour. Sri Shuka said, the great sage, consequently responding to all the words that had been used, then calm and peaceful rested his case. As for the cause of matters strange to the soul, he accepted that things happened as a consequence of what he had done in the past, and so he, in order to put his karma to an end, continued to carry the king's palanquin as he did before. O best of the Pandu dynasty, also he, the ruler of Sindhu and Sauvira, fully believed in discussions concerning the subject of the absolute truth. Thus well informed, hearing what the Brahmin said about that what eradicates the falsehood in the heart and is approved by all yoga practices and literature, he hastily came down from his vehicle and threw himself head on flat on the ground at the lotus feet to be excused for his offense. That way, giving up his false claim that he should be respected as the king, he said, who are you among the twice-born souls moving so secretly around in this world? I see you wear a sacred thread. Of which forsaker of the world are you the disciple? From where and for what purpose have you come here? Are you, as a soul of pure goodness, here for our benefit or maybe not? I do not fear Indra's thunderbolt or Shiva's trident, nor to be punished by Yamaraj. Neither do I fear the heat of the sun's rays, the moon, the wind, or the weapons of the heavenly treasurer Kuvira. My greatest fear is to offend the Brahmin class. Could you, who as someone fully detached, like a dullard, conceals the power of wisdom, who as someone completely indifferent wanders around, therefore please speak to us? For no one of us, O saint, is able to fathom to any degree the meaningful yogic words you uttered. I am asking you, as a direct representative of the Lord of spiritual knowledge, of the master of yoga and best preceptor of the saintly scholars in the science of self-realization, what, being engaged in this world, would be the most secure shelter? Are you, in your goodness, maybe him in person, who, without revealing your true identity, travels the surface of the earth to study the motives of the people here? How can someone bound to family affairs, missing the needed intelligence, have a clear view of the final destination of the masters of yoga? One can see that when one physically is engaged in a certain way, one will become tired. I suppose that is also true in your case, in your movements as a carrier. That is a generally accepted fact, as certain as the fact that on the basis of an absence of water, it cannot be so that one can come bringing it and such. Because of the heat under a cooking pot, the milk put in it gets hot, and because of the hot milk, the hard kernel of the rice in it is cooked. The same way, there is for the person who, like a grain of rice, has to comply with the heat of the material world, the inescapable bondage to the sensual experience of one's material existence. The governor, who as a human ruler over the citizens wishes his subjects all the best, should be a servant and must, so to say, not grind the flour that is already ground by pointlessly imposing his will upon his subjects. Instead of imposing himself by punishment, he, in fulfilling his occupational duties, rather should be of worship for the infallible one in whose service being engaged one is released from all kinds of sin. Be therefore, from the truthfulness and goodness of your repentant self, as good to show me, to this maddened and proud God of men, kindly, your causeless mercy as a friend of all people in distress. For then I may find relief from the sin of being in contempt of such a great personality as you. You, as a friend of the friend of all, are, in your equanimity, as someone far removed from the bodily concept of life, not shaken at all. But even when someone is as powerful as Lord Shiva, he will certainly soon be destroyed, just like me with my practice of pride in relation to the greatest souls.